Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, as always, gather around that apparatus that you have that you listen to This Life with Dr. Drew and Bob and Shelley.
Yeah, we're joined by Shelley Sprague. Shelley, thank you for joining us.
I think she should just be permanent.
Thank you.
It's fine with me. It's, you
okay.
Know, it's okay.
I'll take it.
We have a special guest.
Hello.
We have a special guest. It's Becky Savage. She has a harrowing story where two of her four sons lost, I don't know how we describe this, you know, she lost them in one night to acute alcohol and oxycodone.
Two in one night.
Yeah. Nick, who was 19, had just finished his first year of college. Jack was 18, had just graduated from high school. Becky's actually a nurse. Uh-huh. You can imagine how devastating uh-huh. that is when you know, have a medical background, you still can't help. But Becky, we appreciate you joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
And she has a foundation named 525. It's named after the boys' hockey numbers, 5 and 25. And this all happened in 2013. Becky, I'll just let you sort of start out. What do you want people to know about the foundation?
Sure. Well, the foundation, again, thank you for having us and bringing light to what we're trying to do as a foundation. The foundation was started, actually, the boys died in 2015, and about a year had passed, and we were asked to speak locally at a town hall meeting related to underage drinking. And my husband and I, neither one of us are public speakers, but we thought long and hard about it and thought, you know, since our boys had been underage drinking, that we could maybe shed some light on that. And we were promised maybe 12 people would attend, 20 at the max. Well, over 200 people showed up to hear us talk about our story. And we thought after that event, it was just a room full of parents that were just as scared that something like this may happen to them. So we decided to start the 525 Foundation in memory of Nick and Jack. Jack's number being number 5 and Nick's number being number 25, hockey numbers. Just to kind of tell their story, share their story, share who they were, and hopefully save a life in the process of doing so.
How are the other – the media, Leah, I was excited that she was going to be
yeah.
here. I know the story.
Yeah.
I was following it when it happened. I'm so sorry.
Oh, my God.
I can't imagine. And there's so many families that you've touched hearing about this and motivated to help their children get sober because of your story. And I know that may be some solace to you. But I always wonder about the other two boys. How are
Thank
they
you.
Doing? How are your other two boys doing?
You know, it's day to day, you know, as it is for my husband and I too. I mean, anytime you lose somebody that plays such a big role in your life and a big piece of your heart, it's hard every day. But we've always been a very tight-knit family, and we continue to carry on. I think my husband and I made a choice, you know, after the boys had passed away, that we could either sit and feel sorry for ourselves and be consumed by grief, or we could turn it into something positive and something that we can change and focus on our other two boys. And our other two boys have been involved with our foundation, which I think it's been rewarding for them, and it maybe is a healing process too to see that we are, you know, making a difference in the lives of other people. And Nick and Jack.
That's what I was hoping, because I can tell you that I deal with thousands of families.
Well, that's what I wanted.
And you have had a positive effect on people that you've never met.
Thank
just
you.
Your story.
Mm. Thank you.
And
thank you for saying so.
Let's zero in. Is it her courage, her willingness to give back, and what has got people mobilized?
Just the awareness of how real it is when it was first broken, that, you know, something about them both in the same night had this profound effect on parents.
Like the unthinkable.
Two times in one night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it woke a lot of parents up to be proactive about their kids' opioid addictions, to not be so naive about their kids, to understand that hockey stars can have drug problems too. I mean, your story being transmitted out to the public, I know it was probably painful for you, but it was so helpful to other parents, and I hope you know that.
I appreciate hearing that. And it does help. Nick and Jack, like we said, we're great people, wonderful people. Mm-hmm. And we're going to make a difference in the lives of others. And I think just by us telling their story, they're still able to continue to do so.
Your courage is so profound too. As a parent, I can't imagine what you have been through and what you continue to go through. And I have to say that people respond to the truth.
Yeah.
And I think that what you're doing is very, very necessary for people to understand the severity and the dangerousness of what our society is portraying as maybe partying or maybe
exploring, rite of passage,
out. These things are deadly and dangerous. And I think that your courage to bring that into the forefront of people's minds with children, I think is so brilliant and I know so hard fought, and I'm very sorry for your loss and your losses.
Let's talk a little bit about the bigger problem here of sort of hopelessness and lack of meaning and, what we do with this generation that her son's representative.
Everything I read about her kids, they're high achievers, athletes, which you're seeing all across the United States, especially across the Rust Belt where there is that opiate epidemic. And those kids, there's so many hopeless, helpless, unparented kids out of control and on drugs that even the high-functioning kids are being drug into it. That's why I say it's such a social problem. You understand?
Yeah.
And these kids.
But what is it?
My son Elijah pointed out to me when he was 16. He goes, "Dad, when you were a kid, it was just musicians and bad kids and juvenile delinquents on drugs. Dad, the quarterback of the football team is on drugs.
Yeah.
The head of the student council is on drugs.
Right.
You need to understand that." And he told me that 20 years ago, and I was like, don't talk to me like that. That's not true. And it was true. It was the beginnings of what was to come of all kids are taking drugs. All kids.
So what is going on? What can we zero in on any sort of something here that's missing or it's obviously not parenting because it's all different kinds of parenting.
Right.
And to blame,
I think it's exposure, number one.
Let's just be really clear. Blaming parents just creates another victim. You know what I mean?
Well, there's always been this mentality, and it still exists now to this day. The good raised kids' parents don't want the good raised kids' parents to hang out with the bad raised kids' parents, right?
Yeah.
The parents are absent. Listen, I hung out with the Bales kids. They didn't have a mom. The mom was gone. The dad was working all the time. They didn't contaminate me with juvenile delinquency. You know what I mean?
You contaminated them.
There's that. But I'm talking about that divisiveness that is in our society, I think, even more now.
But can we begin to sort of – it's so hard for us from our perspective.
You lived through it. You had your kids hanging out with kids you weren't so crazy about them hanging out with.
No, I understand. And
you talk with them about it.
I do, but I'm wondering what it is about the world they see that is so – unpleasant, probably.
I think her sons were experimenting.
No, of
course. I think the one was following the other, and the other was experimenting. But you had to have that whole big swath of their community that had opiates in it, that had hopelessness in it.
Exactly. And so what is there – is that – and that is a symptom of what would we call that?
You don't want to blame parenting. It's bad parenting.
Well, I'm not going to blame Becky.
Not her. I'm talking about just – there's – There's a new playground in New York City where parents aren't allowed. Have you heard about this?
Saw it today.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
No parents were around when I was playing when I was a kid. Were they around where you were, Shelly?
Nope.
There was parents around.
So it's excessive parenting? That's been
the problem? It's excessive parenting.
So the whatever it is about us, our generation, we infected the younger generation, and those that then started using infected their peers? Is that a way of looking at it?
Okay. That's somehow how I look at it.
All right. Becky, do you agree with that, or is that something more from your perspective?
How did your kids get involved with drugs? Do you know how? I mean, is that too?
You know, painful? From what my understanding, and I could be a naive parent. I mean, they've never been in trouble before for drinking or for drugs, and we had never had suspicion that they were. And I would like to think that, you know, we were a hyper vigilant parent. You know, I stayed at home while my husband went up to the lake to go fishing with our other two kids. Nice. You know, we were involved. I made them check in with me when they came home. I mean, different things like that. I think that they probably just fell to, you know, peer pressure. And when I talk to parents and I talk to kids, I tell them, have an exit plan. Because I think, you know, we're fooling ourselves if we think our kids aren't going to be exposed to stuff. And if they don't have a plan on how they're going to get out of it, it's going to be easier just to go along with it.
So in other words, how to deal with the peer pressure, a strategy for
dealing. I think, and I think a lot of the kids I talk to, it's very immense. I mean, I think we forget how hard it is for kids to go against that grain of peer pressure. And for some reason, you know, the kids that I talk to, I've talked to, you know, thousands of kids across the country. And
who are their role models? Who inspires them? This is the stuff Bob and I talk a lot about. Shelley, I don't know if you think about this, but, you know, what do they look at as sort of inspirational?
Well, these kids sound like they were, you know, they were on the right
so
track
hockey players might be there.
And they were, you know, they were involved and the family was involved. But I'm talking about, why is the saturation of opioids in the households that are around with no education and no knowledge of how dangerous these things are mixed with alcohol? Yeah. That's my question.
And, you know, to be honest, being a nurse and being in the medical field, the healthcare field for, you know, this is 25 years for me. I never had that conversation with my kids about prescription medications and don't take them if they're not prescribed to you. And, you know, certainly not with alcohol.
Yes.
3 years ago, we had not ever heard about that in our community. Mm-hmm. We were naive to that as well.
Right. Yeah.
Now, you know, we're screaming that at the top of our lungs, you know, and it seems like everybody in our community is becoming more aware of that.
Right.
I mean, they are cleaning out their cabinets. Mm-hmm. You know, we're doing pill pickups and pill drops and things like that.
Good.
That's
But when I go to other smaller communities, you know, and other cities, they're still naive. They're like,
aware.
Wait, what? Kids are taking medications out of, you know, out of, you know, people's medicine cabinets.
Yes.
Where are you?
They're still naive.
Where are you guys? What city are you in?
We live in South Bend, Indiana.
Indiana, okay.
Near Notre Dame.
Yeah, it's a metropolitan area. But that's a huge part of the opioid
beltway.
Yeah. Well, Indiana, I went to a methadone clinic in Gary, Indiana, one time.
Gary's very different.
Gary's a tough working class town.
It's a little different.
That's where Joe Jackson came from, right? But
I guess they don't expect it in South Bend, but they expect it in Gary.
That's sort of true.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, that's sort of true, at least historically.
But I do believe the difference that us as parents need to understand is when I was in my teens and early 20s, 3% to 5% of the population experimented with opioids
or
illicit drugs.
Yeah, yeah.
Now it's about 20%.
Now it's about
20%.
Is that the fact that we've made too much of pills? I mean, again, I was raised the idea that all medication is dangerous. Nobody thinks that way anymore.
Nobody thinks that way.
So pills are safe. Pills, everyone takes them. What's the big
deal? You heard that. I had a doctor saying, well, I don't want to give her Prozac prescription because she might kill herself with Prozac. I said, she can go to the 7-Eleven and get aspirin and kill herself. Yeah. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just this weird kind
but
of
I
thing
think
about
under
medicine.
The circumstances with Becky is that there is a lack of education and high-powered chemicals in people's medicine cabinets mixed with alcohol and no education around that. And I think we do need to shout from the mountaintops.
But we have been shouting from the mountaintops. She's been shouting for 3 years.
Uh-huh.
I've been shouting for 10 years. You've been shouting for 10 years. People know it now in I would say in large parts of the United States, people know about it. They're still dying like everywhere.
But not so much with the prescription stuff, though. Now it's more.
It's always benzos are in there.
Oh, yeah. That's the hidden
epidemic. That's a prescription drug.
Oh, yeah. That's the hidden epidemic. That's still, no one's addressed that.
I got kids that take 10 benzos a day.
I know. Mm-hmm. I know.
Yeah.
No one's addressed this yet. That's the next phase of this.
Right. So when you talk, have you met other parents that have lost their children?
Hey, before we get to that, Becky, I got to take a little break, and when we come back, we'll answer that question.
Okay.
We'll be right back. I want to welcome True Niagen to the show. True Niagen is a dietary supplement designed to boost a key cellular resource called NAD. It's also, that's short for nicotinamide adenine dinucleotide. It's a coenzyme found in every living cell. It's essential to our cells, and it's a key mediator of metabolism. A lot of work being done in NAD these days. I've been watching it very carefully. The science is preliminary, but it's been looking good in a lot of areas. What's exciting about these studies is that the increased NAD levels may potentially help with cellular metabolism, regulating circadian rhythm, and they're even hopeful it may slow the effects of aging. Very interesting research, and seemingly no adverse effects. So while studies are very early, science out there is impressive. The biohacking community has gotten behind the research. Actually, the addiction treatment community has gotten behind it too. I've been intrigued with the possibilities surrounding NAD and the research behind True Niagen. I suggest you check it out for yourself. Go to their website. In June, I had a chance to speak with the company's chief scientific advisor, Dr. Charles Brenner, on the Dr. True podcast. It was deep science, and it piqued my interest. In fact, I got on the product after talking to him. Definitely check out that episode. And to learn more about the research, the science, and the True Niagen supplements, visit TrueNiagen.com. That is TrueNiagen.com. Check it out today. We are right back. Of course, we're with Becky Savage. The story is like too painful to repeat. Becky is very kind and has set up the 525 Foundation.
I don't know if we've said it because it's so hard to say. Yeah. Becky lost two of her four children in one night to a drug overdose.
And you asked before the break about other parents.
About other parents. Are you talking to other parents and forming? Because Drew and I have been talking for years that it's the moms that are going to save this society. That moms bonding together who have lost their children can have a tremendous energy and power to change legislation.
Look at Matt.
To change. Yeah. Mothers Against Drunk Drivers is the best example. It's mothers. It wasn't government officials or county supervisors or elected officials or pharmaceutical companies. It's moms. And I think moms – are you seeing a grassroots groundswell of moms who have lost their children organizing and coming together like you have?
Yeah, actually, a lot of the moms, there's like the PTOs or – groups from the schools that have really reached out to me, and then they are the driving force behind getting the schools to get me to come to their schools to talk as an assembly. So it is the moms that have heard the story and are, you know, trying to get me infiltrated into their schools. But I tell you, I was an ambassador for Walgreens, and they had me speak at their Chicago event with We Day and in Seattle. And the energy with 20,000 students in Seattle sitting there and listening and hearing the boy's story, and it was completely silent. But the vibe in that room, I said, if we can get these kids to go with a message and to feel confident, these are the kids are who's going to change the next generation in our future. I mean, the energy was just so, you know, overwhelming. You know, those kids are really where we need to hit and where we need to get them on board. In fact, our board has just opened up a new spot, and we have a community advisory meeting with students that have reached out, like wanting to help. And, you know, I want to hear from them. You know, what do you think we should be doing next? You know, what are you seeing out there? What are better ways to affect, you know, kids, you know, of your age? And we're trying to really involve the kids in the next steps and the next decisions that we make as a foundation.
Yeah, I think prevention.
So moms, yes. Kids as well.
Yeah, prevention in the schools. We need to demand education and prevention in the schools in junior highs. We need to get
elementary
them in
school.
Junior highs.
Are we though missing a piece of this?
The hope part.
Yeah, by focusing too much on the drugs. I mean, that's of course the education is necessary. The culture's got to shift. Medicines have to be seen as dangerous.
Yeah, medicines have to be not in everybody's
cabinet. Let's just talk about parenting for a second, because it's my favorite subject. At about 11 or 12 or 13, that's a time where you're going to the park on your bike by yourself, and you're now responsible for you. We've told you the fundamentals now for 10 years. There's none of that going on. So kids are not learning that they are their own autonomous decision makers responsible for themselves. That there's not that handoff from child to young adult.
Well, that's what this place thing was all about.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
It looked, you know, it looked scary to me. Did you watch the video?
No,
they got saws and hammers and nails. Yeah. No parents allowed in the playground.
It's in New York City, a new playground.
Yeah,
and it looked great to me.
Yeah,
yeah.
But you know, so but that getting the kids to realize are the ones who
It was interesting. The parents were even learning about their kids by watching. This one woman was like, I don't understand why he's so preoccupied with that hammer. He seems to like the hammer so much. Yeah, he's a boy. <It's> like...
but so, you know, it is true that opioid use in the next generation is down, right? So yeah. They've learned the lesson of their brothers and uncles and whatever and sisters and aunts. But marijuana use is astronomically high.
Yeah.
Benzodiazepine use has stayed as steady as it always is. Oof. Right,
and they're also getting it on the streets, and it's not really benzos. I just have to say that.
Oh, really?
Sometimes it's fentanyl.
It's got a bunch of stuff in it.
Sometimes fentanyl.
Yeah, sometimes it's fentanyl. So just FYI, we need to stay out there in the communities talking about this stuff.
So is there something we're missing? That's just we have this opportunity to talk about this. You know, with
I get back to what Charles Barkley said 25 years ago and got crucified. Barkley. He got crucified for it.
Okay.
He's a great philosopher. He got crucified for it.
To play defense.
He is. He said he got crucified because he's a gambler and he cusses and when he was in his prime in basketball.
Okay, what he
and
said.
Because he got in trouble because they were saying, you're a role model and you don't act like a role model. And he goes, I'm not a role model for what? For who? For your kids? I never met your kids. I'm a millionaire basketball player. Role models should be teachers and aunties and parents and the people in your community. Don't look to millionaire basketball players to be your role models or you're going to be in real trouble as a society.
So that's
what
note.
He said.
A great note.
Right?
I like that.
So I believe that we're in a Mach 2 of role models like the Kardashians and all these kinds of people are the role models.
Yeah. Wealth, always follow
wealth,
the money.
Wealth is the role models.
Yeah.
That's not who role models are.
Yeah.
Teachers are. You know, local police like officers are. The community has the role models.
So digital safety digital, the social media now is almost as great a threat as anything else to their mental health. And I don't know how we get that genie back in the bottle.
You can't, but still, that fuels this role models are Logan Paul and role models are this. It's really a problem of what kids model after. I really believe that. And I try to discourage
it. Well, I mean, we modeled after, a bunch of dope fiends. And look at, we ended up where we ended up.
I role modeled after my Uncle Woody, too. I was talking about him the other day.
Okay.
He was a bartender, drinker, storyteller.
Uh-huh.
He was always a guy you look forward to seeing.
But your point, and I'll throw it back to Becky, is, again, I think an interesting one is we need to sort of – heroes and role models need to be sort of – kids need to be
more accessible
or shaped. We need to pay more attention to that for kids. Maybe. I don't know. What do you think, Becky?
Yeah, I think just the energy in the kids that I talk to, like I said, at the We Day event, but then in the schools, when I go and talk to them, I always have a handful of kids that come up afterwards and say, I'm so sorry, and they give me a hug and whatnot. But then what can we do? I always get that question from them. What can we do?
Who do they look up to?
The quickest response is, go home and have your parents clean out their medicine cabinets.
Yeah,
that's
good.
The first thing that you can do in an immediate fix today.
Right.
And it's a simple thing. When you're done using them, dispose of them properly. If we can get that change in mentality for people instead of keeping them up in their cupboards, and storing them for however many years, they're not going to end up in a kid's pocket at a graduation party passed out to a group of people. Mm. So just little things, but I think the kids want to do something. They just don't know what to do.
I'm just thinking about I'm going back to my days. A lot of alcohol and pot use back in the day was to fit in, to be cool, and to deal with social anxiety.
Social anxiety, sure. I mean, but I have a 17-and-a-half-year-old, and she obviously knows that off-limits drugs, off-limits alcohol, off limits. Now, she's not off limits to go to these parties. She's just off limits to utilize those substances.
And how come you were able to get that through to her and another mom might not have gotten it through?
Well, I think because she obviously has since birth been around people who have had their ups and downs with substances. She's been to funeral. You know, she knows that
people
die. Did you
have specific conversations with her about it?
Very specific conversations.
What did you say?
And have them now.
What did you say?
That there is no place for substances in teenage life, and that if you want to go and hang out with your friends, that's great. But you have to know when to leave, like Becky was saying, like an exit strategy. She always has an exit strategy.
That's cool.
You know, she always knows that she can phone me or she can call an Uber. She has that autonomy to do that. And my daughter isn't one that's going to mince words. She's going to say, like, oh, I don't really like when you're on that substance.
Oh, that's good.
I don't really like hanging out with you when you're drunk because you seem kind of dumb. Or I don't really like a bunch of stoned people on pot because they're really boring. And so she's able to sort of articulate that at 17 and a half. And she's lost a lot of friends to alcohol, just not being close to her anymore. And, you know, I tell her it's like, it's okay, you know. They'll come back around.
Bob, what are you going to tell your kids as they hit 15, 16? What are you going to tell them?
Way before that. I think at 8, 9, 10, 11.
Well, here we are.
Elijah knew at 8, 9, 10, 11.
Mm-hmm. That what? What do you tell them?
That, well, I just told Elijah, you know, the chances that you have a genetic predisposition to become a homeless heroin addict is high. I didn't tell him it was only 50-50. I told him it was way high. Right?
Almost absolute.
Almost absolute.
Certainly.
Right. Certainly.
And but I can't stop you because it's going to be up to you at a certain time. And then we just pounded him into his head. One time I took him to an intervention of John F.
Okay, so both of us
saw it at 12 years old. Yeah. He saw addiction full-blown insanity.
But all three of us probably exposed our kids to drug addicts and drug addiction. So we did that. We all three did that, number one. I'm interested that Bob is holding back on being the man. He's not quite willing to be the man when it comes to laying down the law on the drug addict stuff.
I said the same thing. Listen, people are going to take drugs. And if you're going to take drugs, given all that you know about what could happen to you, I can't stop you from that decision. But understand, and he had been to Cry Help when I was in Cry Help. I said, you're going to end up in Cry Help.
But you stopped short of one thing.
What?
And I bet you said – you stopped short of saying, if you do it, it's on you. All the consequences are going to be
that.
Including when I call the cops and have you put away.
Nobody does that, Drew. You keep saying that. No one has ever called the police on their children.
I would have done it.
I know you say you would have, but you didn't have to.
Well, because I said it, and I meant it.
What about breaking the therapeutic bond?
I just simply said to them, I said, look, do I allow any illegal activities? Is there anything illegal that I let you do? Please, because if I do, and I just want you to know, if you break laws, it's on you.
You had kids that are yours. My kid said, you run red lights with me in the car all the time.
Modeling is crucial.
Shelley was his therapist later in life.
Yeah, I mean, modeling is crucial. We know that modeling, I know that my daughter is done listening to my words, and she's watching how I behave. And she's been watching how I behave. Yeah. And I have been very open with her and others, obviously, about my history and our family history of substance use and abuse. And I can trace back almost everything that's happened negative in our family history to some sort of substance. Mm. And I'm not shy about discussing that.
Yeah.
At a very early age,
I think. Which is good. Yeah.
At a very early age.
I think it's so important that parents talk to their kids. I think you guys all have brought up that, you know, just talking to your kids, there's so many parents that haven't talked with their kids about it because they're afraid to bring it up.
Yeah.
They don't know how to talk about it, what to do about it. And then, they don't know how they'll answer questions.
And right. I would argue I'll let you answer that in a second, Becky, but a big part of the fear is they're fearful of being a parent, of going, I'm not going to allow it.
Yeah.
They're fearful it might harm my relationship with them. And that is the single biggest mistake I ever see parents make is fear of somehow unraveling the relationship.
Well, I mean,
you're
still a dad for being a dad, from the kids. From the kids,
yes.
But that's the hard part.
Yes,
is
that's
that
the
you're
job.
Unpopular.
That, oh,
I know.
Too bad.
I'm very unpopular.
That's the job.
I know.
Well, with Elijah, I said,
we've had the discussions of sex and drugs and alcohol and things like that with our kids. but never prescription drugs. That wasn't something, you know, in our area, like I said. Right. And
they might not even be aware it's illegal. It might seem like a legal move to them. Like,
but they may not even have known what they were doing at all.
Yeah, yeah.
I believe
a lot of kids that I talk to, they don't understand why prescription drugs are dangerous because they're prescribed by a physician.
Oh, my God.
It needs to be in science
class. That's a whole other conversation. I tell them they are safe if they're prescribed to you by your physician.
I don't think they're even safe in that context.
Yeah, we see too many unsafe prescribing
well,
practices.
Well, I see too many kids with broken arms and broken legs and regular childhood injuries being prescribed opioids.
Crap loads.
And a lot of them. And that, I think, in my estimation, a lot of my clients ended up on opioids due to an injury.
Yeah.
And then did mix alcohol with them or mix cannabis with them and then did have that sensation, right? And then sought those drugs out in their future. And I've seen a ton of that, you know, in my experience.
Yeah, so think about it. The orthopedist or the general practitioner continues the broken arm, the kid comes back 2 weeks later, I want a refill. Oh, here's 30 more. It's 30
What's
more
the most – here's I got one idea about why it became such an epidemic. What's the hardest time in a young adult's life? 13, 14, 15, 16, 17.
Yeah.
What's the greatest feeling on earth? Opioid intoxication.
If you're an
addict. For anybody.
I hate them.
A lot of people
hate
them. A lot of people do.
I hate how I feel on them so much.
You'll avoid it.
One time I avoided it when I was having surgical pain. I became suicidal. The pain was so bad. And I thought, I better take this stuff. I know it's not that bad, but
I think that's the biological difference. You're a rare. Because I do believe that a lot of kids have gotten caught up in the addiction epidemic who are not, don't have that all the fundamentals, right?
You're right. They at least have to feel good.
They like
at least,
it.
Yeah, they at least
when
have
you're,
to like it.
When you're 14 or 15 and you're given OxyContin because you broke your arm playing football, you're going to like it. It's going to put away your social
anxieties
and all those things.
Yeah. That's the piece.
And that's what happened to all this.
But I'm arguing that we maybe want to really deal with their social anxiety in some proactive way.
We have to start in elementary school. I went to my daughter's junior high and I talked to the kids and they're anxious.
Yeah.
They're
anxious about their future.
Yeah, that's weird. We're making them anxious.
They're anxious.
The press is making them crazy.
They're depressed. They're anxious, and they're 11 and 12.
They're worried.
They're very worried, chronic worried.
I mean, I feel like it's worse now. You and I have been talking about this for a year.
No, it is worse with my daughter and her friends. It is worse. They're so concerned about college right now. They can hardly even have a good summer.
College is useless at this point.
Oh my gosh!
What the hell are you talking about?
What do you mean? What am I talking about?
I'm going to let Becky go before we go. Before we go really negative. Because Becky's got a very positive message.
Yes. Sorry, Becky. We almost got derailed.
So we're gonna derail. And I'm gonna talk to Bob a little bit about his politics because it's an evolving process. But 525foundation.org is where people should go. And tell us again, Becky, what we'll find there.
You'll find our story, kind of how we got into this, doing what we're doing. And just a little bit about upcoming events. We have a tab. We'll put some educational things on there. And just if you'd like to follow us, they can follow us on Facebook, on Twitter. I'm trying to get crafty with my IT stuff because I know that's what the kids are following and paying attention to. So.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, Becky. Susan, I'm going to say farewell to Becky, and we appreciate it. And listen, if you need anything from us, count on us,
yeah,
okay?
Yeah, thank you so much for your courage and grace.
You're welcome.
Please, really.
An honor to talk to you.
Thank you so
Likewise.
Much.
All right, Becky.
Thank you for the opportunity. All right, bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. So I'm worried about politics, and I'm wondering where your head's at now, because you and I have been just
struggling. No, I was just talking about college.
I'm worried about that these kids are anxious now because of the craziness in the press, the craziness and the rhetoric, and it's just really bothering me.
You know what most children describe to me is worry about the planet. I think there's a lot of hysteria about we're all going to be underwater 50 years from now.
Well, we grew up with the hysteria about nuclear war.
Nuclear war, right.
Yeah, that was over our heads constantly, and it was real.
Did that nuclear war fear and going under the desks that I did when I was a kid, we all did when we were kids, did that lead to anxiety and addiction in a certain sensitive part of the population? I think it did.
It might have. What's curious about our generation is why did we start looking up to super antisocial drug addicts? That became the role model for everybody. And it makes me wonder if we suddenly elevated somebody.
Like, hip-hop's great.
They don't. But they don't elevate them. People. They elevate them and tear them down. They elevate them and tear them down. Elevate them and tear them down within a month or a week or a year.
So that's fascinating.
Right.
So who are they bringing up? Who do
they elevate? Kanye West, and then tear him down. He's an idiot. Kanye West, build him up.
And a lot of this stuff we're talking about is white kids.
Yeah.
Which is not, it's not all the country anymore. It's like, what percentage is that?
Well, here's an interesting statistic.
It's not happening in other states.
67% of Pennsylvanians are white.
Yeah.
25% of Los Angeles County citizens are white.
Yeah.
So we have an integrated society that we grew up in and that we live in.
Yeah.
The rest of the society is not like that. I don't know what the numbers are in other countries, in states, but I was working in Pennsylvania. I wanted to know the demographics of it. 67% white people in Pennsylvania.
Which seems like a crazy amount.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I think you go to Ohio, it's worse. But
worse? Like, did you hear what he said? Yeah. White people are worse.
But if you go to, if you live in
I
New York
the
City.
Lack of diversity was like.
That's what I meant by worse.
So we grew up in a diverse county, in a diverse part of the United States.
And I'm not so sure it's well executed here in Southern California, but you go to New York
City.
It's
segregated.
That's, New York City is where it's a living, breathing, daily phenomenon, which is people of all stripes living together. It's one of the reasons I love New York City.
Right.
And it works. Mm-hmm. So we can make it work. We know we can make it work. Why does it work there? Well, anyways, it's not a different
because
topic.
They've been doing it for 100 years.
Maybe.
150 years. They know how to integrate culture into that city.
I'm just wondering where your head's at right now.
Well, my head is at about education. I think we need trade schools. That will give kids hope. When you're identified at 16 as not so bright, you need to go to a trade school.
Ow.
This idea – no, I'm sorry. This idea that every kid is a snowflake and needs to graduate from a four-year university with liberal arts degree is ridiculous. Huh? Those kids
can't – Can my daughter just do that? Is that okay?
Put your headphone on again.
Yes.
Put your mic on again. No. I want that for her too.
I'm on this couch right now.
No, we're not being realistic about who we are as a people.
I agree.
And the value of somebody like people worked in my dad's company, right?
Yeah.
They were appreciated.
Yeah.
There was this woman who was the leading glass blower and sign maker in Los Angeles. She was the best. She was a glass blower. She was celebrated as the greatest glass blower in L.A.
No, I think you're right.
No, there's no respect for people of great craft and trade anymore.
I agree with you. I totally agree with you.
And everything is just make it for the cheapest amount.
And also for tech tech is sort of the glorified – sort of what's
no, but
elevated.
Most kids are going to get the liberal arts degree, which doesn't mean shit. Their parents want them to have a degree from Emerson or from this place or from that place, and it's got to stop because we're ruining their lives with debt.
All right, we're going to leave it at that because I don't disagree with it. I don't disagree with that.
Shelly does.
No,
put your headphone on.
No, she disagrees with it. She disagrees with it for her child. She disagrees with it for her child, and that's fine. I disagree with it for my kids,
too. Let me tell you something.
But if my kids had been struggling academically in some meaningful way.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Trade schools.
Yeah.
What is wrong with that? To identify your strengths rather than make you have to have strengths you don't have.
Listen, I would definitely.
We can't hear you. We're actually still recording.
Definitely say.
This is making her feel uncomfortable because she got a kid going to college in 6 months.
I definitely would say if she was struggling that I would move towards something more.
Yeah.
Trade oriented or whatever she was passionate about.
Skills.
Right?
Yeah.
But she is an academic and she does have the challenge.
So don't worry
and she
about
can
it.
Face
so don't worry
that.
About it.
That she,
and
it
I
works
think,
for her.
And I want her to be able to experience education because it's just something I didn't experience is really
I'm a big advocate.
I think the colleges are getting dumped on by parents who don't parent their children and they want the colleges to make them grow up.
There's some of that.
There's a lot of that.
All right.
That's not what I'm doing.
We're going to leave it. We got to get going. Thank you to Becky. Thank you.
It was
guys.
Amazing
you.
To talk to that woman, by the way.
We'll see you next time.
All right, that's about it for this episode of This Life. Check us out at KBC, being Lawrence Savon, 790 Midday Live Talk Radio, Monday to Friday. You can also tune in every day live via the magic of the internet at kbc.com. If you miss it, we've made it simple for you to find all the shows at drdrew.com, the Adam and Dr. Drew podcast, the Sing One I Do By Myself, Dr. Drew podcast, This Life, of course, with Bob Swole Patrol, Mike Cantho, at his new health and fitness podcast. You can find us on Twitter at This Life Podcast, at Dr. Drew, Dairy W, at Rehab Bob Forrest, and of course, our lovely producer at First Lady of Love. I think I know who that is. If you love this show, please subscribe and tell a friend. We appreciate it when you do. We'd love to hear your feedback as well. Send us a message. Join the email list at drdrew.com, drdrew.com/contact. You'll also get a weekly email from us on that. While you're at it, at drdrew.com, please support our sponsors by clicking through the banners. We only advertise products that I can get behind. So thank you for supporting them, those that support us. And thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.